evening, metal faithful. It is I, your mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And this is the Metal Hammer of Doom, the Super Blog Team Up Edition. I'm your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And because the Doctor is in, we are reviewing, as part of the Super Blog Team Up, and that, of course, is the theme this year, this season, this quarter, the Doctor is in. We are reviewing the fifth studio album by American heavy metal legends, Motley Crue, Dr. Feelgood, which was released September 1st, 1989, and topped the Billboard 200 chart, making it the band's only album to claim this position as of 2020. It was the first album Motley Crue recorded after their quest for sobriety and rehab in 1989. In addition to being Motley Crue's best-selling album, it is highly regarded by music critics and fans as the band's best studio album, as opposed to, say, Girls, Girls, Girls. This was also the band's last album to be recorded with lead singer Vince Neil until the 1997 album Generation Schwein. Joining me tonight, as he does with almost each and every Metal Hammer of Doom, my brother from another mother, Mr. Essential, Jesse Starcher. How do you do, sir?
Wow, I get to participate in the Super Blog team up, but it's not comic book related, so I feel out of place, but strangely at home right here on the Metal Hammer of Doom, Mark Rattledge.
Yes, sir. Jesse, what's your familiarity with Motley Crue?
Well, I mean, I knew all the hits. I wasn't a big fan of Motley Crue. I wasn't seeking out the albums back in the day, but you couldn't escape these guys on the radio. I mean, that's how big of a band these guys were. They made some mainstream songs that, again, they weren't completely pop or mainstream in any way, but you were able to find them on the radio pretty easily back in the late 80s and early 90s.
What's your earliest memory of Motley Crue? Like, what song do you remember hearing?
Ooh,
like, do you think it might have been Home Sweet Home?
I'd have to take a look at the previous albums. I don't know much about their chronology when it comes to which songs came out when.
Dude, we did the Doit. Come on.
I know we did the Doit. I know we did the Doit. We did it. We did the Doit. But, I mean, honestly, I can remember Dr. Feelgood being the song that was the biggest hit in our area.
All right. So let's chronologize this out.
Okay. All right.
So, 1989, September of 1989, that would make me 13, which would make you what? 11? 10?
Yeah, I was 11.
Okay. What were you listening to when you were 11?
If you're asking about how many tapes I owned, let's see. I was probably listening to DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince at that point in time.
Okay. And so if you heard Motley Crue, it was because there happened to be a rock radio station on that somebody was playing, but you weren't actually seeking them out.
Yeah, it's either that or I was not seeking them out. It's either that or it was the radio, either the radio station or MTV.
Mm-hmm. I would say, I mean, there are obviously earlier hits that made them popular and got the ball rolling for them, but I can't imagine any song by theirs getting more radio play before Dr. Feelgood than Home Sweet Home.
Yeah, I'm going through some of the some of the songs that were on previous albums. I mean, I definitely recognize them, but I'm trying to picture if I've heard them back then, or I remember Home Sweet Home and hearing that on the radio for sure. But that, what album did that come off of? That was the, oh my goodness, help me out. Home Sweet Home?
Theater of Pain.
Theater of Pain, thank you. Okay.
So before Dr. Feelgood is released in 89, there was Too Fast for Love, there was Shout at the Devil, Theater of Pain, and Girls, 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 which even though it went 4 times platinum, that was a one song album, and everyone knows it, including Motley Crue.
So I'm looking at Theater of Pain, mm-hmm. going through what the track list off of there. Smoking in the Boys' Room. Mm. I remember hearing that.
Let's start with Shout at the Devil, which comes out in Shout at the Devil was 83, right?
I can't say that I remember hearing that.
Okay. Because that was a big one. Shout at the Devil, hit number 30 on the as its peak position. They did a cover of Helter Skelter. On the main Billboard chart, Looks That Kill got to number 12 from Shout at the Devil.
Okay.
And then Too Young to Fall in Love got to number 17. So, to date, by the time Shout at the Devil has been released, their highest charting single on the U.S. main was Looks That Kill.
Okay.
Does that familiar to you at all?
I've heard it over and over recently, but I can't say that I remember hearing it at all back then.
Okay. So Theater of Pain comes out. Smoking in the Boys' Room jumped to number 7, and Home Sweet Home only hit 38, which is weird. I would have thought it charted higher.
Yeah, those ballads back then just really knocked it out of the park when it came to being played over and over, so I'm very surprised.
And then finally, Girls, Girls, Girls. Girls, Girls, Girls actually charted to number 2.
Okay, all right. My earliest exposure probably to Motley Crue was my cousin Mark. My cousin Mark he grew up a guitar player. He's a couple years older than me. He's probably as old as you, actually. And I remember I'd go over to his house, and this is before I was even listening to really getting into hard rock, heavy metal, or anything like that. But he had Van Halen posters. He had Motley Crue posters. He had Motley Crue videos going on his TV in his room, and that was probably where I remember first seeing Motley Crue and being a little confused sometimes as to why they look like girls. So I they really had that glam hair metal look back in the day. So that would probably, I mean, if you look at the cover of Shout of the Devil, I mean, they are trying to pull off this crazy glam rock look.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing that. So obviously my exposure to these guys had to have been in probably 84, 85 or something like that, to where my cousin had these posters on his wall. But as to remembering what I heard, I couldn't really enjoyed. I couldn't really tell you. But yeah. So there you go. I would say it had to definitely been early to mid 80s at the very earliest that I remember actually seeing them, but hearing them and enjoying them, I recall that being more the mid 80s or late 80s to what we're going to be listening to tonight.
So some notes about this album that I think are interesting. Metallica drummer Lars Ulrich recruited Bob Rock to produce their self-titled 1991 album after being impressed with Rock's production on Dr. Feelgood. Have you ever heard the demo of the single Dr. Feelgood compared to the produced version on this album? Because they are night and day.
Oh, really? No, I haven't.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm not going to play the demo tonight, but if you have a chance, like just as kind of an experiment with sound, you really should hear the demo version of Dr. Feelgood because it's almost a different song.
Yeah, man. Bob Rock, what a producer.
Mm-hmm.
That bit you were mentioning there on the classic albums run that's on Amazon, which I think they took a bunch of those off of Amazon Prime now, which kind of upsets me. But I was able to catch the Metallica one, and they talked about that. They talked about how Bob Rock came in, and this is a different story for a different day because we're talking Motley Crue and not Metallica tonight. But it was interesting to hear how those guys didn't get along. Bob Rock and Metallica didn't get along a lot of times.
No, because they couldn't bully Bob Rock, and Bob Rock knows what he's doing, and he wasn't going to let himself be bullied.
Exactly, and it turned out to be obviously, it's probably one of the biggest selling albums ever when it comes to metal and Metallica.
And I don't want to get off on a side tangent about Metallica, but that's kind of like maybe the little-known or the well-known but hardly spoke about truth about Lars Ulrich and what's his face there? Vodka McGee.
Hetfield?
Yeah, James Hetfield.
Mm-hmm.
They really are like alpha bullies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kirk Hammett, they get along well with because Kirk Hammett's like, I just want to play guitar. But they, especially with James Hetfield and his drinking, like apparently he could be like a holy terror in the band.
Oh, man.
And they've talked about, a lot of this came up in the Some Kind of Monster documentary. But
I haven't seen that. I need to watch that sometime.
It's really worth the watch. Maybe we should talk about it someday. But, you know, that's the thing. You know, Bob Rock is a highly talented professional producer, and he knows what he's doing, and he's not going to let an asshole like James Hetfield or Lois Ulrich, who's like a control freak, push him around. And, you know, there's a reason why the Black Album is like a multi-platinum selling album.
Yeah.
And it's not because Metallica sold out. It's because Bob Rock pulled, you know, oil from a dead sand field.
You know, it really does. That classic albums series does show you how important, not that you wouldn't think that it isn't, but it definitely does show you how important production of an album is.
Dude, we're going to hear that with Dr. Feelgood, which we should get into momentarily. But that's the thing. Like, if you compare, like, if you go back to, you know, there are, like, Looks That Kill, mm-hmm. Too Fast for Love, rather. You know, if you go back to, like, Too Fast for Love and Shout at the Devil, I mean, they don't sound like they recorded them in some dude's room or anything, but they definitely sound raw.
Yeah, the production value's not there.
Right. And Theater of Pain and Girls, Girls, Girls sound slick, but there's nothing special about them. I mean, Girls, Girls, Girls is popular because it's a chauvinistic stripper song. People love it. You know, I love it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but, you know, it gets by, and Motley Crue have even said, you know, they've talked about this in the book, The Doit, you know, like Girls, Girls, Girls was like, well, we need to put another album out for Elektra, so here we go. I mean, they were all like fucked up on drugs, and you know, my point being is that Theater of Pain and Girls, Girls, Girls sound like professional albums, but there's nothing special about their production. Like, there's a reason why Dr. Feelgood is not only a fun album to do because Chris Bailey said, hey, we're doing stuff about doctors. it really is one of the last almost perfect albums of the 80s.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, it comes out in September of 1989. You know what comes out shortly after this or around the same time? Nirvana's Nevermind.
Oh, yeah.
And people... Robert Winfrey. People can talk about how shitty Nirvana is and what a terrible band they are. But that's like, you know, but that's ignoring their contribution to the sea change in music that's going to take place in 1991.
Yeah.
So when you think about, like, and this does actually go back to Motley Crue, because they release Dr. Feelgood in 1989, and they go on tour, you know, and they spend, you know, the next couple of years living off that album. And then Vince Neil's going to leave the band, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. Yeah, I think I covered this already, that this was the last album they did with Neil until he came back later. Mm-hmm. And then they replace him with Schmagegi. And I remember I remember talking about this when we talked about The Dirt. I can't remember the singer who came in's name, but they were like, they were having a hard time recapturing the magic with Vince Neil. And they were also struggling with the two things that were happening simultaneously in the early to mid-90s. So again, they are now in the shadow of their highest-selling album ever, and they have stepped out of that shadow into an entirely new world where music has completely changed.
Yeah.
Everything they are, everything they're doing is now passé. They are passé.
Yeah,
they are part of a culture that is no longer relevant and at that moment in time. And you have two things. Sorry, hang on. And you have two things happening. You have the Seattle sound, and you have the new wave of heavy metal. So you have Nirvana happening on one side of the street, Pantera happening on the other side of the street. You know, and the whole Roadrunner scene that's going to come out of that. And Motley Crue, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they come back, and you're just like, aren't these the guys that dressed up like chicks for a while? And and I think that's why I just came into enjoying the hard rock, heavy metal sound probably as Nirvana released Nevermind. I can remember owning that tape shortly thereafter, getting the Metallica Black Album. And it wasn't because Megadeth's Countdown to Extinction comes out in 92.
Hang on, the guy's name, I want to be respectful. The guy's name was John Corabi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The But yeah, these, you know, these bands that I was getting into at that point, I mean, I remember hearing about Motley Crue and some of their songs, but I was like, you know, I'm not into these guys. I've also told you in the past that there was definitely some strict... It's so strange because my family flip-flop. They could be strict about one thing, but something else could be on almost the same level, and they wouldn't mind, or they just didn't have a reason to say anything. But Motley Crue in my house was probably associated with devil worship at some point because of the whole, pentagram being on. It was thrown around on a few. You could see that pretty much all over the place sometimes when you saw some of their music and their albums. But anyway, I mean, shout out to Devil. Come on. So that was just a band that I either missed the boat on and didn't have the chance to buy albums and really enjoy what they put out there. And then when I did buy the albums, I was getting into the rougher stuff, the Seattle Sound, I guess I was following the mainstream metal bands at that point. But I mean, who couldn't? Megadeth's album, Metallica's album that came out in 91, 92, they were fantastic pieces of work. And I told you Nirvana, I was picking up Pearl Jam's 10. So I didn't have space for Motley Crue in my life. And just like you said, they show back up and it's like, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. What do we do?
So just to finish up that last point, they were when John Corabi was recording his vocals for Motley Crue in 1994, the album Motley Crue, they're like, can you sound like Phil Anselmo from Pantera and Pete Steele from Typo Negative? And then like they named like two or three other people, and he was like, none of those people sounded like Make Up Your Fucking Minds. If I remember nothing else about John Corabi, I will always remember that. That's hilarious. Mm. But I think it's indicative of what Motley Crue was going through at the time. Like, they are desperately trying to stay relevant in a world that has summarily rejected them because the world just kind of turned a page. Like, they didn't do anything wrong. They come up there like their highest charting album to date to find that the whole world has changed. And they're like, what did we do? You know? Yeah. And then they're playing catch up.
I'm trying to think of, I'm sure there were bands, but I mean, in the early to mid 90s, were you listening to bands talk about women like that anymore, like these guys do?
Dude,
I mean, we don't really see a resurgence of that until, well, I shouldn't say this, but I mean, I don't see a resurgence of that until Steel Panther, where I find it funny now. You know, it's hilarious. But, you know, back then, I wasn't hearing things other than rap. I was going to say, go ahead.
I would say, like, you know, like, Limp Bizkit had girls dance in their videos.
Sure.
Kid Rock was definitely talking about cheeky women. But yeah, I would say, like, as far as the dehumanizing and sexualization of women became entirely a rap thing for a while.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, white boys were whining about the abuse they suffered. You know, they were talking about them bones.
That's right.
You know.
Alice in Chains did not have a booty call song on any of their albums, as far as I know.
No, Phil Anselmo was talking about fucking punching people in the head.
That's right.
You know, Sepultura was talking about them roots, bloody roots.
That's right, buddy.
They were not. They were not like tits, bloody tits. You know.
I want to listen to that. Sounds like a Cannibal Corpse song all of a sudden.
Shake yes, watch yourself. That was mystical.
Oh wow. Well, you know, we're going back to 1989. This does throw me back. I've listened to this album a few times, obviously, to get prepared for this. But I will tell you that this is the first time I actually listened to this album all the way through. Was for the show. So that. Or 2021, folks, and I am listening to Dr. Feelgood all the way through here.
I want to look up something real quick. I want to see if I have the date right for the Black album, because I feel like I bought a bunch of albums around the same time, if not the same day.
I'm pretty sure it was 91. Oh man, I got so many memories with that album.
Okay, so the Blackout, yeah, it's 91. So maybe I bought Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood around the same time, but you know, it had already been out for 2 years. What was the other one? Forever Your Girl.
Paula Abdul?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I'm Forever Your Girl.
I listened to that album about 2 years ago, and it still stands up in my opinion.
Oh, totally. I may have bought Paula Abdul and Motley Crue on the same day.
What a mix.
Yeah. When did Nena Cherry put out her album?
Oh, Nena Cherry. You said you about called her Buffalo Stance, didn't you?
Yeah, that's the one song I remember was Buffalo Stance. We all hang in a Buffalo Stance.
That's a good one.
We
do the dive every time we dance?
Okay, so it was Raw Like Sushi, and that was 89. So I can almost guarantee around the same time I got Paula Abdul's Forever Your Girl, Nena Cherry's Raw Like Sushi, and Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood all around the same time. And I must have bought the Black album and Nevermind on the same day too, because I remember them all kind of being associated with one another.
Yeah, this was probably my introduction to Columbia House. Mm-hmm. When it came to Nevermind and the Black album. Oh man, I can remember taking that catalog to school and in study hall, just kind of pouring through it. Like, what's the next album I'm going to get for 3 cents?
Yep. Oh my God. We've talked about this before, and I don't want to get off too much in a tangent because we got to start playing music. But I remember when you would get those boxes from Columbia House; it was like Christmas every day.
Oh my gosh!
Every single time, buddy.
No doubt about it. I bought so many rap albums out of that catalog. I remember buying Nas. I remember buying Ice-T. I remember buying fucking Sir Mix-a-Lot. Ice-T, Original Gangsta. Man, I abused it, as many other people did. So, and the person that got me into it was my grandma. Because I'd go over to my grandma's house on the weekend, and she'd have all these tapes. I know, I may have talked about this before in the past, but Grandma Mary had tapes upon tapes upon tapes. And I'm like, where in the hell is she getting all these? And then I would stumble upon this little catalog sitting on her kitchen table, and she had a pen and a piece of paper, and she was going through it, and I'm like, what is this, Grandma? And of course she got the country edition of things.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? So I was like, oh, I want the metal edition, and signed up. And of course they gave an account to anybody. Because I don't think they had a way of checking, but you signed up for it, and it's just like, oh, you're 13? Okay. Here you go. We'll be sending you, and we'll Man, I went into so much bad credit before I even turned 18 because of that place.
All right, so Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood. We're not going to play TNT because it's just, you know, women masturbating and explosions and shit.
I call that atmosphere.
But the edition I have from the service that I'm using has an extra track on it. Get it for free, so we'll play that. And
okay.
We'll do 3 songs at a time, all right?
Sounds great, man. Oh, we're going to start this off so good.
Yes, sir. All righty. So, first 3 tracks over here are the title track, Dr. Feelgood, then Slice Your Pie, and then Do the Rattlesnake Shake. We'll be right back. So I feel like if the Steel Panther modeled themselves after any one band, I mean, I'm sure it's an amalgamation of a lot of bands from this era, but I feel like if there's one band that Steel Panther most modeled themselves after, it was Motley Crue. Because Motley Crue might be the one we just want to fuck all the time band since Whitesnake. Holy cow.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I was, as we were going through those songs, I was taken back to, you know, about that time period when I was hearing some of these songs hit the radio.
Did you ever talk to a girl when you were in school and be like, hey, man, do that Rattlesnake Shake?
She's like,
get
no.
away from me.
No, I probably beatboxed in front of her.
Stop spinning!
She swooned. Remember, at a couple years after this, Jackal's going to hit the scene. I'm Your Lumberjack Baby. So, you know, there's probably a band that kept up this type of atmosphere, I guess we'll say, when it comes to songwriting, because there was quite a few. I bought that album probably out of Columbia House, but I remember listening to that and hearing a lot of discussion about women. And but yeah, man, I agree 100%. Steel Panther is the mirror image, present day mirror image of what I think, just taken to some kind of crazy extreme of what
yeah.
Motley Crue was.
Well, I mean, look at Slice of Your Pie, right? Clearly they're talking about vagina.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Honey, give me a little slice of your pie. Please put your vagina on my penis.
Wait. Hey, pretty from across the room. Got something sticky sweet for you. Oh boy. Oh boy.
Right. And then Steel Panther's like, okay, but how can we make it less subtle?
Yeah, exactly. We're not
hey,
just
pretty,
going
pretty
to
come across the room. I'm hard and erect for you. Order me up another slice of your pie.
Yeah, dude. It's like they were just like, okay, obviously back, you had to kind of tiptoe around.
Yeah.
The censorship back then, and
sure, we're like right in the middle of tipper sticker land.
Yeah, dude, it's
era, I should say.
So they're finding fun ways to phrase things.
Yeah, I mean, look, the next one, Rattlesnake Shake, right? She did the Rattlesnake Shake, make my body ache.
Yeah,
rotate your hips on my penis. Yeah,
we are not. We're not anywhere done either. We're just in the first three songs.
No. I mean, Dr. Feelgood is like, yeah, I'm in the streets and I'm a grimy drug dealer dealing with other drug dealers. I like getting fucked up on drugs. Dr. Feelgood. That's that whole song, right? And it's great.
Yep.
Okay. Motley Crue singing about getting fucked up on drugs. Great. That's what we came for.
Yes,
we came to party. And then like eight songs in a row. Put your pussy on my dick. It makes me feel great. Put it's just like one song after another.
We're going to get one song in there that's a ballad where where the pussy is left. And he's really lamenting the fact that he really wishes he had some pussy right now.
Without pussy, I would die.
That's what's going to happen. That's what Steel Panther would have done if they would have had this album. You know, back then, and had the free reign to do whatever they wanted. They'd just be like, okay, let's hit them over the head with whatever we want. No subtlety.
Yeah.
You know, another band that I was thinking of that does some similar stuff.
Okay, Steel Panther is like watching a porno in 3D.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. with your VR glasses on. Poison at this time is putting out similar stuff. And I don't know if you listen to a lot of Poison or not, but I mean,
I made Pat sing Unskinny Bop to Evan Bevins because I needed to hear him hear. I needed Evan to hear Pat sing about masturbation.
Okay, that's where that. I didn't scroll up far enough. I was trying to the masturbation comment. I was like, well, I need to check out of this real quick. But yeah, you know, Poison is singing very similar content, at least what I've heard. But again, Motley Crue is these are the guys that you want to go to get that sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That they embody this at this time. What an opener, by the way. We open this album with Dr. Feelgood, title track, and it is obviously, man, what would you say? Probably top five from this band, really. Are you going to put anything else? Are you going to put anything else in the top five above Dr. Feelgood and knock him out? I don't think so. Not in my opinion.
Again, I think we already covered this, but like, didn't we already say that this is probably the highest charting single ever?
There you go.
Go. On the U.S. main. No, I'm sorry. Girls, Girls, Girls was. That went to number 2 in the U.S. main. And then on the regular U.S. chart, it went to number 12. Dr. Feelgood. I mean, it's close. It's number 6 on the U.S. chart. So it charted higher on the general U.S. chart. On the main, it ties with Smokin' in the Boys' Room. And it gets beat by Girls, 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 but not by much. But it also charts in Australia, it charts in New Zealand, and it charts in the UK. And as I'm looking at this, it's the only single they've had that went gold.
Let me tell you what I'm seeing here, because we're about to start another set of three. Mm-hmm. And according to the service that I'm using, the next song we're going to play is the only song off of this album that really has more plays than Dr. Feelgood.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I blame the SpongeBob movie for that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Which, for the next track we're going to be hearing?
Yeah, they used that in the trailer. And they didn't use it in the movie, which I was pissed about.
I was going to say, this most recent movie you're talking about?
Yeah, Sponge on the Run.
I don't remember seeing the trailer, though. So, I was going to say, I can remember the 2002 movie or whenever it was where they brought in, did a rendition of Twisted Sister.
Mm-hmm.
You very well could be right. So all the kids are going out and looking for this next
track.
What
is that crazy song that, like, you know, that gets SpongeBob and what's the starfish's name?
Patrick.
What's that? Because like, they literally, like, as soon as like the trailer like shifts into high gear and they're like, oh my god, road trip, and they go to save his snail Gary, you hear Kickstart My Heart.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
I'll tell you what, man. I was playing this in the car with the kids, and remind me to round back to trying to explain to your child what some of these songs are about without having to explain to your child what these songs are about.
Oh, no.
I mean, but there's nothing like having a 10-year-old feminist in your back seat to, you know, listening to She Goes Down. And,
oh,
like,
no.
Down where?
No. All right, everybody. We're changing...
Go to parkour class now.
Out you go.
She goes downstairs to the basement all night long.
this is a lady that doesn't. Yeah, she doesn't stay upstairs very often.
No,
she goes down.
She goes to where the workbench is in the basement.
Indeed. Where they all need to go, I guess.
That's very sexist.
Yeah, I was going to say, that wouldn't get you very far with your daughter, feminist daughter, either.
I just want to let it be known that Mark Rattledge is, you know, an equal opportunity, but Jesse just said that all women should go down in the basement.
I was paraphrasing you, sir. That's what
Oh, okay. Nice bat back in the tennis ball.
Oh, damn it. Please play the next three.
All right, here we go. So that was, this will be Kickstart My Heart. Without You and Same Old Situation. We'll be right back. Jesse, I'll tell you, this Beast podcast is the same old situation. It's the same old ball and chain.
Ah, oh, man. So, those three...
You know what would have helped? You know what would have helped them write a better ballad than Without You? Because Without You is great. I'm not saying it isn't.
Yeah.
Without You is darn near perfect. But you know what would have made it 100% perfect?
Tell me.
If they had Grammarly.
Interesting. Tell me
if
more.
If Motley Crue had been using Grammarly to write their ballads, Vince Neil might not have left the band.
You're probably right, as a matter of fact.
their next albums would have been like multi-platinum selling albums if they had Grammarly to help them.
The unspoken truth that you didn't get to read in the dirt was the fact that Vince Neil had an issue basically with grammar. And the rest of the band, they said, no, sir. And he was like, what? What's the problem? The sex, the drugs, what's going on? They're like, no, you have to fix yourself. You have to fix these words you're putting on the page.
Well, I'll tell you, Nikki Sixx wrote most of the music. Unfortunately, he wrote them using mostly doodles and like pentagrams and shit. like drawings of the devil, and Vince Neil's like, what the fuck is this? It's like, well, it's a song I wrote called Shout Out the Devil. He's like, you drew a devil with a pitchfork and a megaphone.
That would have caused a little red light to pop up right there if he would have just had Grammarly.
That's what I'm saying, because Grammarly's AI-powered product would have helped communicate more effectively. Grammarly would have helped them write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook. I mean, none of this existed in 1989, but it could have.
It could have.
On Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you would be writing, on the web or otherwise. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. So when Vince Neil was like, or Nikki Sixx was like, I want to write a song about sticking my dick in a girl's vagina a lot, and her always being accepting of said penis. And Grammarly would have been like, well, probably shouldn't. I mean, the song you have here is, I want to put my dick in you. I want to put my dick in you over and over, over and over. Why don't we change that to, it's the same old situation.
There you go.
It's the same old ball and chain.
That AI, the AI is impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive.
I really hope the people at Grammarly check this podcast to see if we're doing the Grammarly ad.
Oh, please do. I would have loved, so you get, you put your lyrics, before we finish up this ad, let me put one more thing in there. So you put your lyrics in there, or what you're writing, and Grammarly has an AI bot that will kind of give you an emoji to show you what the feeling is that you're getting across with your writing.
Right.
But they don't have a sloppy wet penis.
Well, I think I think the original lyrics to any number of Motley Crue songs would be like a deflated balloon. But when Grammarly changed it up and gave it some pep, it would be a peeled banana. Or zucchini, or an erupting volcano.
There you go. Eggplant, all the way.
Eggplant.
There it is.
Ding dong, man. Ding dong. Ding dong, man.
Ding
yo.
Ding dong, yo.
To download Grammarly today, go to... I hope Chris Bailey is driving when he hears this. to download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M Network. That's getgrammarly.com/W2M Network to... turn your unsubtle sex songs into platinum-winning hits.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
These three. Subscriptions to Grammarly skyrocketing after that ad read.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to tell this girl that I like her, but all I can figure out is I like you. It's like fucking Cyrano de Bergerac.
For these three, can we get back to the album? Oh my gosh.
Yes, sir.
These three songs, all released, right? They got all released as singles. And of the three, I mean, my goodness, I don't know how you could say anything about anything bad about Kickstart My Heart.
Dude, that song gets me so amped. Yeah, like, oh my God. I just, if there was a better song for the Ultimate Warrior to run out to than what he went with, it would have been Kickstart My Heart. Because when I get high on speed.
That's right. I mean, the wind-up for that song, just at the beginning, you know, if that hit the stadium speakers, you know.
Oh, my God. Dude, when that song kicks off, when they're done with the... And you go... If you don't punch a baby, you're not a real man.
That's right, buddy. Find yourself a baby. Kick it, too.
Yeah, just fucking punt it. Go to the stadium tour, the football stadium tour that Motley Crue and Def Leppard are playing at, and punt a baby through the uprights.
Nice, nice. Mark Radulich told you to do that, okay?
Yep.
Of the three, though, my favorite and possibly, very much possibly, my favorite off of this album is Same Old Situation. I like that song.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I mean, it definitely doesn't get as many plays, anywhere near as many plays as Kickstart My Heart, but I remember when that song came out and really enjoying it, and to this day, it's probably one of my favorite off here. Kickstart My Heart will always remind me of my wife's brother. I know I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I think it was when we were talking about The Dirt. He was the guy that we associated after I started dating my wife. I mean, the one guy that was one of the biggest Motley Crue fans I've ever met was my wife's brother Rob, and he played drums, so obviously he was a Tommy Lee fan. You know, he would sit there, and even not even sitting at a drum set, as soon as Kickstart My Heart would hit, man, he'd just start going like he's playing the drums, and he knew these songs forwards and backwards. So Kickstart My Heart is always going to remind me of him. Actually, just about damn near any Motley Crue song is going to remind me of him. But yeah, Kickstart My Heart, most definitely. And Without You, what a ballad. I remember, you know, probably calling up the local radio station, could you dedicate this to my girlfriend? And, you know, back in whatever grade I was in. And
yeah, but you like started dating your wife when you were in first grade, so.
It was a little bit after this. It's about 3 years after. 3 years after the release of this.
Okay. Did you really dedicate Without You to some girl?
I'm sure I did. It was either that or a Def Leppard song at the time.
I hope it was a Def Leppard song.
It could have very well
been.
And
I hope
anything.
It was Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Tell me what the album was that was... That would have been... I know exactly. I don't... I've probably told this story already, but my babysitter was irate when that song became popular because she had little kids running around her house singing that song.
Yeah, and that's why we have tipper stickers, because of Prince and little kids.
She would, oh, you want me to pour some sugar on you? Come in here. And she would grab the sugar and pour it in their hair in order to teach them a lesson.
Nice.
Yeah.
And the song you're thinking of is Bringing On the Heartbreak.
Okay. Oh, that's a good one, man.
Yeah.
Did you do any skating rink stuff when you was a kid? I mean, I know you did some of the clubs later in life.
So most of my stories are about being beaten by my parents. But the few happy memories I have of childhood are my dad bringing me to the United Skates roller rink.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, he took me for skating lessons, you know, roller skating lessons, not ice skating. We didn't live in Minnesota. We lived in New York. Yeah, every Saturday for a really long time, he brought me up there, and we did skating lessons, and then we would stay for the free skate, and, you know, and I remember for years and years and years, like, that was the thing to do. Like, before video games and everyone stopped going outside, the thing to do as a kid was to go to the roller rink. And there were two in the Long Island area where I lived. My dad took me to the one closer to where we lived in the hood. But then when we moved to Massapequa, I lived down the street from another roller rink, and we hung out there all the time.
Yeah, dude.
If you could get a girl to couple skate with you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was like a slice of your pie.
Oh. Yeah. I guess maybe you could do that. Pull those parallels. So, yeah, we had the similar situation. Not the same old situation, but a very similar situation here in our town, where The rink is still down there, and it is still operating to this day, down by the fairgrounds.
Yeah, we have one in Tampa too that's still going, but it's like it's one of those now like retro things that adults do because fucking kids don't do it.
No, dude, no, and they hold birthday parties, and that's about really probably the main source of their income. But yeah, I was in the same boat, dude. Every Friday night, you would go down there, and you'd be hearing people at school. You going to the roller rink tonight? You going to the roller rink tonight? Now, granted, I lived on the outskirts of this town, so most of we were still going to the roller rink, living 20 minutes away from town, going to a completely different school district. We were all heading to the roller rink to have a good time and couple skate to some Brian Adams or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but I remember these. I remember the ballads getting played and everybody going out there holding hands
I had to have been six or seven, between five and seven. So this is, and I'm born 76 for all you kids out there listening to this podcast. So this is the early 80s. Can you imagine the songs they played?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So we were skating up until I was 13, 14 years old
right
here. So, right. You know, that would have been 92. So, but it died off pretty quickly. I think a lot of it was, well, I say quickly. I personally stopped going because I started playing video games, Mark Radlich, and of course got a job shortly thereafter. Ain't no time to be skating, sir.
I wanted to ask you actually because one of the notes on here, and I meant to ask you this before. One of the notes on here was that Dr. Feelgood and Kickstart My Heart are available in the soundtrack to the 2009 video game Brutal Legend. Did you ever play Brutal Legend?
Never did, and I can't remember if that's the one that has Jack Black voicing it. I know what it is. Mm-hmm. I've never played it. I've wanted to. That's cool though, because it's obviously built around the metal and hard rock songs, and that's kind of the feel of the whole game. So we'd have to look at the soundtrack for that whole thing. Do you have it in front of you?
Hang on.
Click on it and just tell me what else is on there, because it doesn't stop there. I think there's a lot more heavier tracks. A lot more heavier.
It was more better heavier?
Get me Grammarly right now.
It doesn't give a list here.
Well, I'm trying to remember. I swear Jack Black was involved in it somehow, but I'm probably getting that screwed up. Okay. So Garth Metalis. Oh, wow. Okay, I might have.
Okay, I think I got it here.
Okay.
Doesn't give bands, though. It just gives songs.
I've got it for you. Here you go. Okay. All right. So this list has been pulled from EA Denmark's site. Now, it's the full Brutal Legend soundtrack released by EA Denmark.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I know, I'm looking at it now. Holy crap.
3 inches of Blood.
Yeah, buddy.
Anthrax, got some Anvil, Apostasy, Bishop of Hexen. Can't say I've heard of that. Got three tracks from Black Sabbath. Carcass, Children of Bodom,
Dr. Feelgood from Motley Crue,
Dark Tranquility. Nice. That's a nice pool right there.
Tame FTM, doing it again.
Dokken, Iced Earth.
Yes, Kickstart My Heart for Motley Crue again.
Look at that soundtrack, dude. How long is that?
Death Clock's on here. How hilarious is that?
I want to have
Rock of Ages, Death Leopard.
Nice. That's good. That's good
stuff.
Rob
Zombie.
There.
Yeah. Well,
Mastodon. High Speed Dirt by Megadeth. One of my favorite Megadeth songs.
They have a Budgie song on here. How fucking crazy is that?
Now see, that's a band I didn't even recognize, so don't know no Budgie.
Budgie was an inspiration to Metallica. I think they've actually covered one of their songs.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, let's get on with the show. Another Motley Crue song. Let's go ahead and play the next three tracks here. We're on the back half of the album now. So we got up next Sticky Sweet. She Goes Down. And Don't go away mad. Just go away. Jesse Starcher, don't go away mad. Just go away.
Blame it on the rain.
That's Millie Vanilli.
When did that come out? I was just curious. That had to have been released like shortly or right around 1989. July 13th, 1989.
Ugh, God, what a year for music.
No kidding.
So I have to tell you, if I had to pick a song that doesn't have, like, of the lighter Motley Crue, like, I'm not allowed to pick any of the heavy stuff, just the kind of lighter fare. Probably okay. Don't Go Away Mad is, like, my favorite song by them.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. I mean, yeah. I remember this was, like, the last off this album that we see get released as a single, right? Or it's not the last, but, I mean, it got released as a single, correct?
I believe you are correct.
Okay, yeah, and I remember...
All right, just to get this, just so we have it said... Dr. Feelgood is August 28th of 89. Kickstart My Heart, November 20th of 89. Without You is 90. March 12th, 90. Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away is May 28th of 1990. And Same Old Situation is July 31st of 1990.
Okay. All right. So, Yeah, of what we've heard so far, Don't Go Away Mad is the other single that, and the last of the singles that we are going to hear tonight that got released. And I remember hearing it and loving. I mean, how many times did you actually say that to a girl?
All the time.
Don't go away, man. Just go away.
You know, and I don't want to make myself sound like a woman-hating psycho. I have a daughter. I have a wife. You know, I respect women. But, you know, I had my struggles growing up. And I would say between Guns N' Roses, I used to love her, but I had to kill her. And girl... Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away. I had a hard time deciding which was my you know, theme to live by.
I hear you, sir.
I had some struggles as a youth.
Well, I just thought it was a funny thing to say, so I really do. As far as lighter songs go, that's a good one to pick, man. I really do enjoy that one. We've already made fun of She Goes Down. I don't think we'll make fun of it anymore, but it is, I mean, I just heard his pants unzipping for the first time.
And the giggle.
Yeah, and the giggle, and I was like, well, wait a second. I've never
I've been blown before.
Okay, all right. I'm glad we have that on record.
Yeah, for anyone listening to this in the future, just know I've had a blowjob or two in my lifetime. Never was it preceded by a giggle. Never.
It doesn't usually start out so well.
I mean, a sigh? Sure. A groan? Absolutely. A reticent? Absolutely.
Put that away, sir.
You know, if you could hear eyes crossing or rolling, yes. All of which has preceded a blowjob.
Oh, wow.
A dutiful wink, even, but never a giggle.
Yep. Well, anyway, Motley Crue wrote a song called She Goes Down, and it is exactly what you think it's about.
So I played this in the car with the kids.
Yes.
Like a good father does. This was a couple of days ago. I was taking them to parkour class, and it's a drive across town from where we live. Because the school that we bring them to is close to their school, which is also across town. Mm-hmm. But my wife came home because she had to tutor, and she was like, can you jump back in the car with the kids and take them to parkour class so I can tutor? I'm like, I hate you, girl, just go away. I used to love her, but I had to kill her. That's going to get played at my trial, by the way. Sir, we have you on record quoting Guns N' Roses. that was all in my head. In my mind, you know, out loud, I said, sure, I will put pants on and take my kids to parkour class. Absolutely. So I jumped in the car with the kids, and I turned up Dr. Feelgood, and we're like, yeah, you know, when you have a 7 and a 10-year-old in your car, it's good to play songs about drugs and pussy.
Oh, gosh.
And they didn't think anything of it. Like, it's, you know, none of this is, like, I played Scooter for my son, by the way. God Save the Rave, Jesse.
Okay, all right. Yes, nice.
That he was into. My daughter, but, you know, he was like, yeah, more Scooter. Neither one of them could care less about Motley Crue. However, you'd think she would have asked at some point about She Goes Down or Sticky Sweet.
Yeah,
Or Rattlesnake Shake. You know what she asked me about? You know, she was like, can you explain the song to me because I don't get it? I'm like, oh, God. Please don't ask about the blowjob song.
There's like, yeah, you got an 80% chance of making out of the sun scathed. All right, make that scathed.
And she goes, why does he want her to go away? I'm like, oh, thank God. Well, women are terrible. No.
She took that very well.
Yeah. You still have hope because you're still a girl. You're not a full-grown terrible woman yet. No, I didn't say any of that, kids.
But she did say,
she was like, I don't understand the song. He's saying, don't go away mad, just go away. And he was like, you know, Lily, sometimes people just get frustrated. And, you know, like, you don't necessarily always want to leave a situation with the person upset. But sometimes you just got to be not in the situation anymore.
That's right.
So, thus, don't go away mad, just go away. You know, and I'll tell you, like, Motley Crue, not the most deep band, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, as far as breakup songs go and about, like, you know, the stress and the tribulations of dealing with a relationship that goes bad, like, you know, does it get that much better than Don't Go Away Mad?
Yeah, you know, they do a great job of putting in what a lot of people feel
mm-hmm.
into that song.
Highly relatable.
Exactly. You can pick that lyrically, you can pick that apart and identify with everything that's being said. So it's good. It's a fantastic song.
For sure. All right. We have two songs left. We have the traditional last song of the album, and then we have a bonus track. I'm a bonus track. So let's go ahead and play those. It is Time for Change. And then Get It for Free. You get it for free. You're in a famous rock and roll band.
Yeah, at that time probably one of the most famous.
Yeah.
I
had forgotten how good Time for Change is. Like it, yeah. It's one of those ones where it's on a single, it's at the back half of the album, it's the last song on the album traditionally. It's just one where the focus on this is the singles for the most part. You know, an old sex song, and then there's that one at the end, and you're like, holy crap, I forgot this was even on here, and this is amazing.
Very good song. 2 months later, after this album drops, so does the Berlin Wall. And you could probably see that there is some references throughout the lyrics of that song about what's going on throughout the world and kind of the vibe that everybody's getting for this major change that's upcoming. What was the other... Wasn't there a song called Winds of Change?
Yeah, that's Scorpions,
by Scorpions.
Which,
yeah.
Which my father-in-law hates, by the way.
And can we go ahead and hear why?
Yeah. He was a roadie before he decided to summon a corporate sellout.
Oh, no. So he's heard it over and over and over.
Well, no. Apparently... I don't remember how he got to Germany from Florida, but he went to Germany. And I know he went to school in Germany at some point. College, but there is a period of life post surfing in Florida, being a ne'er-do-well, pre being a corporate sellout, mm-hmm. where he's a roadie for rock bands.
Interesting.
Yes, he tells a lot of stories from the road, from his time as a roadie, and there are bands that he likes because they were a great musicians, but also because they were nice to him, they were nice to the crew, they were decent fellas.
Yeah.
Then there's bands that he hates, and it has nothing to do with the music. It's because they were jerks.
Okay.
Apparently, at the top of that list is the Scorpions.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I was just looking at Winds of Change. Winds of Change drops a full 2 year. Well, I say full, but it's about a year and a half after the Berlin Wall comes down. It was recorded in 90.
Yeah, I would agree with your assessment that after Rocky IV, the other thing that ended the Cold War was Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood.
There you go. Well, I mean, that is, people pick this album up expecting one thing, and the next thing you know, Time for Change hits, and look out, ladies and gentlemen,
there's a dirt farmer in Kiev who's like, I'm willing to stand on bread lines and starve to death and die. But then he gets a copy of Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood. Here's Sticky Sweet. And he was like, you're right, America. Penis is better. And in order to have penis and vagina, you must have freedom. And then the Berlin Wall came down.
That's exactly right.
In Germany.
And he knew.
From Kiev to Germany, by the way.
That's the title of their next album, isn't it? Well, and get it for free. It's you can tell the production value. You said that was a bonus track. Mm-hmm. You can tell that was something that was thrown on there without a whole lot of production put into it.
Yeah, for sure.
It doesn't compare to the rest of this album. It's a decent song. I do like how you get a little bit of the, I want to say, blues influence. Is that right? Do you pick that up as well when you hear some of these songs? Like, it feels kind of bluesy a little bit.
It's got swing to it.
I hear that. Okay. And Get It For Free starts out a little bit like that, in my opinion. But, I mean, all in all, like I said, this was the first time I ever listened to the album all the way through. It is one of the most iconic hair metal bands, iconic hair metal albums that hit the stores back in the day and hit the airwaves, and I understand why. I completely do. This band was something else. It would have been really interesting. We know all about the strife that was going on with the band after watching the movie,
The Deut.
Biopic about what occurred. But it would have been really interesting to see Neil stick around and see what they could have done to try and follow this up, if they could have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we got Dr. Feelgood, and we felt good. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I enjoy it. Yeah, you know what? We spend so much time on the Metal Hammer of Doom covering, like, trying to cover new albums. I'm really making an effort this year to, not just because of the Superblog team, but really just in general, trying to kind of break out of the mold and do some albums from when we were younger, you know, to kind of mix them in, especially on weeks where there isn't a whole lot of anything new and interesting to talk about. Kind of go back and reflect on some of these albums and, you know, do they stand up? And that's the thing about Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood. It wasn't just a goofy pick for this topic. It was one of the few albums from that era that transcends nostalgia and still stands up as a great musical. As a great musical number. You know, it's still, we used to talk about, like, perfect albums. So, like, Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
Dr. Dre's The Chronic. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you, there's not a bad song on here. There's not a filler song on here. It's like the opposite of Girls, Girls, Girls.
Yeah. I'll agree with that. You know, I'm hoping that Bailey is listening to this and understands that the next Superblog team up has to be based off of some type of food topic, and then we can do Appetite for Destruction.
I thought you were going to be like he has to, like, pick confectionery so that we can do Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me. the Superblog team up baked goods.
That's traumatizing history right there. I'd have to go into more stuff about how we got paddled at my babysitter's, and it was not good. Paddled, Mark Radulich. Paddled.
All right, we only need one traumatized person on this show.
this is sad.
Before we go, if you've enjoyed, listen, if you're like one of the kids out there, you know, if you got hip to this through like a Facebook group that I posted in, you know, or you saw this on Twitter, you're like, what are these two fucking old fogies talking about the Terror Metal band for? I'm gonna listen to this and then I'm gonna write them on Twitter and tell them, you know, you guys are a bunch of. I don't know. I had like three or four different things I wanted to call myself, and I was like, no, that's going to get me in trouble. That's going to get me in trouble. That's not acceptable anymore.
We'll leave it up to them.
You come up with the insult. I'm sure it's some word I've never heard of. In any case, God, you know you're old when you try to insult yourself and can't do it.
Yeah.
Because everything will get you in trouble. Anyway, so if you're a young kid and you're like, what is this shit all about? And you listen to it, and you want to go check out the full album, you can go ahead and click on our link here in the description of this podcast for getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network to get a free 30 days of amazonmusic.com. You can stream the album. You can stream all of Motley Crue's catalog, the stuff with John Corabi, the post-John Corabi Vince Neil stuff. You can go all the way back to Too Fast for Love. You can listen to Girls, 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 and maybe have your girlfriend or your boyfriend, for that matter. I mean, why be sexist? Just, like, you know, dance on a pole for you. And it doesn't have to be sexual, because pole dancing is an athletic endeavor, as we know.
That's what I understand, yeah.
Yep. You know there was a campaign to get pole dancing in the Olympics?
I do recall hearing that, probably from you.
Probably. So if you would like to dance on a pole to Girls, 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 but you can't quite find it anywhere on the internet for some odd reason, download... Click nice. Our link of getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network. Get yourself a free 30 days of Amazon Music and stream Girls, Girls, Girls and dance up and down a pole.
Do it.
Do it to it. And then skydive naked from an airplane like I do.
There you go.
I skydived naked from an airplane before we started this podcast tonight.
I wondered.
I was like, give me 10 minutes. I got to skydive naked from an airplane. My God, kickstart my heart.
I get a shower. That's what I want to do sometimes so I can dry off real quick. I just skydive naked from an airplane, get all them nooks and crannies nice and dry.
The Jesse Starter air dry method.
Got a shower. All right, I'm hitting the plane. I'll be back soon.
Where's Dad? He'll be along in a minute. Why are you naked? Why aren't you?
What is that whistling sound?
My God!
Jesse
Starcher is kickstarting my heart.
Ah, yes, indeed.
My goodness. So I got to share this with you real quick. Okay. Robert Winfrey. This will be the last thing, and then we're going to close up for the night. Robert Winfrey allegedly sent me ribs in the mail, and I haven't gotten them yet. I don't know where they are. I don't know how long it takes. I didn't really expect him to send me food in the mail, but he said he would. So, and then he followed up today, and he was like, did you get the ribs? And I'm like, you sent me ribs? He was like, you asked for ribs? And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, no, I haven't gotten them yet. And he was like, maybe they didn't make it past the food inspectors. And I'm like, what did you do, rub them with cocaine? He just wrote me back. Don't ask me about my secret rub.
That's right. That is right.
When I get high on ribs.
There was a story, and you may have heard of this, but there was a story I remember watching. I can't remember what show it was. I just know it was one of those shows where they talk about crazy situations. So this guy was really upset that his wife was gaining weight. Mm-hmm. So he started sprinkling cocaine in vegetables, and he would cook the vegetables up, and she became addicted to the vegetables. And she lost a bunch of weight and summarily became addicted to coke at the same time.
That's awesome. So I'll suck your dick to some broccoli.
Expect, you know, when you start eating these ribs, you know, if you start getting the twitches or whatever, you start coming down off of that and you're like, I need some more of them ribs. Don't ask Robert Winfrey about his secret.
She goes down, she goes down on asparagus. She goes down.
Chris Bailey's going to be like, okay, we're just doing comics next time.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting thrown out of the Super Bowl. You know? Poor, you know, Beyond the Pages gal. She's like, you know, nice Lucy Van Pelt. And poor Evan Bevins, innocent Evan Bevins, Dr. Bong, not mm-hmm. about pot.
That's
and there's
right.
me. Dicks and pussy, she goes down. All right, that's it. That's our Super Blog team up edition of Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue. The other Super Blog team up that went up today is Long Road to Ruin. Decidedly less sexual. It was Dr. Doolittle, the porns. No. The movies by with Eddie Murphy. The two Eddie Murphy Dr. Doolittle movies. So check out me and Sean talking on the Long Road to Ruin about the Eddie Murphy Dr. Doolittles, as well as this, as well as all the other great non-sexual, non-druggy Super Blog team-up entries from Beyond the Pages and Dave's Comics Blogs. And, you know.
The porns were called Dr. Does a Lot.
Dr. Does Her All Night Long.
Dr. Do It to It.
Dr. Do Me Baby. Ooh-ooh.
Ooh-ooh baby. Do Me Baby.
All right. So it's Wednesday, May 12th. Jesse, is there anything you want to plug?
I can tell you that there should be a syndicated source material dropping where we talk about, if you are into comics, syndicated source material is dropping some old episodes of source material, and I believe the 15th, which is Saturday, will be What If Volume 1, maybe Volume 2, I can't remember, but I can tell you, What If the Alien Costume Possessed Spider-Man, one of Evan Bevan's favorite What If titles. So I think that was Volume 2, but either way, check that out, because Ronnie Adams and I talk about that, and it is a story that takes some crazy turns, as many What Ifs do.
And then on June 5th, he dropped something called, like, Colonel Sanders or whatever, where I guess he just eats a bucket of chicken on the podcast.
Right. I hope you guys are into that. What is it called? Where you hear the sounds. Now, why does my brain completely fail me when you know what I'm talking about. If you listen to them YouTube videos where it's just people smacking their lips or running a spoon through yogurt. That's what I'm doing with the bucket of chicken. You're a bastard, Mark Radulich. That is about a man who was an inker, a tremendous artist for Marvel Comics, and I hope you guys tune in to listen to me. Give him his props. He was due.
You talking about like that artist, one artist that I like, Keith Lee?
No, just Keith Lee is a wrestler, isn't he?
Yes.
That's what I thought. No, Mark
Scott
Radulich.
Keith, Jack Keith.
Scott Keith.
Mike Keith.
Sam Keith. Sam Keith.
Good night, everybody.